Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable. Welcome to our panel discussion for this Wednesday morning. It's the 12th of December. Very nice to have you with us on this morning, and we welcome you. We welcome our panel, and we'll get to everybody in just a second. I just want to remind you that we welcome your comments. All you have to do is write to us, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. Let us begin in our introductions with Terry Gibson, former New York State Senator, SUNY New Paltz Communications Professor. Terry, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks so much for having me today.
Nice to have you here.
Participating.
Thank you very much. Good to have you on the program as always. Also, our Wednesday regular, Jen Smith, who is a Berkshire Eagle reporter extraordinaire and joins us, and we are thrilled to have you back. How is everything?
Well, I'm thrilled to be here in the lovely downtown Albany area with all of you friendly faces.
You know, I mean this sincerely, or I mean this truly, but like 80% of that did seem sincere.
It did.
Yeah.
Which would you rather live in, Albany or Pittsfield?
Well, I live in neither. I live in the lovely town of North Adams.
Oh, yeah, that is lovely.
Fran Berman is with us. She is the Edward Hamilton Distinguished Professor of Computer Science at RPI and a faculty associate at the Berkman Klein Center for Internet and Society at Harvard University. Good morning.
Good morning.
That's wonderful.
Great day
to
be on.
Yeah. There's
She is so impressive.
There's a lot going on, and we thank you very much for being with us. Also, Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, Alan.
Morning.
How are you?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is that all we're going to get?
Well, what else do you want? It's great. I had a nice sleep last night. That was good.
Oh, very good. All right, good.
I have an app. Did I tell you about my app? The app is you put it down next to your bed. And it's called, but it's an app. It's right down next to your bed, and it tells you how you slept the night before. Tells you if you snored. It tells you, if you got up to do something. And whatever it does, it's all there on the app.
Are you? You're wearing something, or
no?
Just
no,
it's
it, you know, you, this no, no. It listens to you. And you put it there next to you.
Big Brother is watching you sleep.
Yeah,
creepy.
And what do they do with that data, Alan?
I don't know.
They sell it.
It's creepy. It's all creepy to me.
I bet Fran knows what they do with that data.
If I start to get
Fran, we don't want to know what they're doing with that data, do we?
They're selling it to the Republicans and the Russians.
Yes. This is the time to get this guy while he's asleep.
Right.
Cool.
Yep.
We welcome you to join us, panel at WAMC.org. And, well, let's start off with what is happening. We begin. There's a tremendous amount happening in the world, and I was going to start with the Donald Trump, Chuck Schumer, Nancy Pelosi story, but I think we should start with Brexit, and then we'll work our way around to that story. All are incredible, but the Britain's Conservatives will vote today whether to topple Theresa May. A sufficient number of lawmakers from her Conservative Party have demanded a vote of no confidence in the Prime Minister. This is just breaking overnight. Mrs. May's prospects have been endangered by the crisis over her negotiations on Britain's withdrawal from the European Union. And this comes as of we're on Wednesday. Monday, we were trying to set up Theresa May was going to set up a vote, a parliamentary vote, and then that got delayed. She asked for a delay, and then everything has just sort of toppled since then. So the beleaguered prime minister will face a no-confidence vote today within her own Conservative Party as lawmakers upset with her handling of Britain's withdrawal from the European Union seek to topple her from power. Graham Brady, the chairman of the backbench 1922 Committee of Conservative Lawmakers, announced Wednesday morning that he had received letters of protest from more than 48 Conservative members of Parliament, the number needed under party rules to trigger a vote on her leadership. He said the contest would take place Wednesday evening. Remember, they're 6 hours ahead. Mrs. May had been battered from multiple directions by her management of the EU withdrawal or Brexit. In particular, many hardline Brexit supporters within her party believe she was not making a complete enough break with the bloc. Two embarrassing setbacks over the last couple of days. In Parliament last week, the House of Commons voted her in contempt of Parliament, the first time any prime minister has been censured in that way for failing to release the advice her government lawyers had given on Brexit. And on Monday, as I mentioned, she postponed the vote on the Brexit agreement that she had negotiated with the EU. So, where do you think that brings us right now? This is to say it is a turbulent time for Britain is certainly an understatement.
Well, they're in real crisis, obviously, Joe. You know, there is not an easy out on this one. Some polling, I'm told, is showing that the Remainians are now outnumbering the get-outs. But it is a real, we would call this kind of thing a constitutional crisis here, because there's really no place for them to go. There's no movement. Obviously, the European Union is licking its chops and would love to have them stay in. And they're making it as easy as possible. Their court has said, oh, yeah, you could come in with no penalty. You can come back and change your mind with no penalty. So it's clear what they would like. And as far as the people who are making up their minds in Great Britain, what are the choices? You stay in and you have all the benefits, or you get out and then you're not, you don't have that sort of nationalist us first philosophy.
Yeah, but there's all kinds of complications, and it has to do with the Irish, and it has to do with trade, and and so, and of course, when they originally voted it, it was really difficult, I think, for people to sort of think through, and a lot of people voted to make a statement, and I think that's not a statement they want to make, you know, in this way.
Seeing the complications,
anymore. Yeah.
I remember covering, you know, the first announcement of Brexit and kind of localizing it as a story and talking to folks who had local ties to Britain and the UK. And there was a sentiment that, you know, let's wait and see what happens. And, you know, fast forward to now, you know, what's happened is incredible. And it's not only changed the economic landscape, but it's challenging the parties themselves. I think it's interesting that this no confidence vote is coming from within Theresa May's own party. And so what does that say about the party, its values and its change in what it's thinking about its own leader? You know, I think there's, you know, Theresa May's a bulldog. She'll fight and hold a poker face for till the very end. Again, what will, you know, I think the long term effects are not only within, again, the economy and trade markets, but also within the parties itself. Something that, you know, we're challenged with here on our side of the pond as well.
Now, Jen, speaking of bulldog, remember this is the party of Winston Churchill. These are the conservatives, and his whole thing was keeping the empire together, as you remember. For those of us who love this kind of history, FDR was not on board for that, and that's what cost so much. Because in the end, it was FDR and Stalin, and Churchill was looked like Mike Pence sitting there, you know, at the thing. So there's a lot of history here, I don't know how this thing gets resolved. I know one thing, and that is that there's a sort of rural metropolitan split in this. And just like in this country where, you know, so many of the, you know, people who have been left out or feel they've been left out.
I think that's a global issue. And I think anyone around this table can sort of agree. You know, we've seen that with the French elections. We've seen that with our own elections.
Australia,
sure. Other economies and you know, whether it's policies or whether it's people in office. But I think because there's this outcry for revolution, we've never really done succession planning for revolutionary change and how do you make these sweeping changes? We all know that they can never happen overnight. But how do you, you know, how do you lay the bricks and foundation for that? So if this Brexit vote and if this vote regarding Theresa May is taking place now, what, you know, what pathway does that leave going forward, and what foundation does it lay for making decisions going forward?
But what do you mean about succession?
Well, because you have to, you can't just say, okay, this happened. You really have to look in the future of what, you know, what your decisions today and how they inform, you know, the successor, the changes moving forward, and who will inherit that and who will carry that on. You might vote, for example, one particular leader who has this certain platform of revolutionary change or ideals, but who's the follow-up to that? Because there are term limits. There are things like that. And so you have these, if you have these one in the moment waves that, you know, it might be a peak over a couple of years, 2 to 4 years maybe. But what happens when that wave crashes? Will it, you know, how big will that arc be? What will that look like?
Well, it's kind of an impossible position for anybody that wants to assume that leadership role and try to figure this out, because one of the problems is that the public was sold on this concept that this idea of exiting would be rather simple and easy to do. And the pain that they would be subjected to was not made clear to them. Yeah. And now we are inside of it, and the public is beginning to say, well, that really wasn't the case. We really weren't told the truth.
So is there, going forward, my question to you would be, is it inevitable that they have to stay in the EU? Even though this firebrand group within the Conservative Party, with the Tories, are so adamant about getting out with, you know, no, but in the end, it looks to me like the die may be cast, that in the end they have to stay in the EU.
Well, I think it's always better to deal with the devil that you know, and staying in is something that you know, and getting out requires a plan. And the problem is that no one's been able to come up with a plan that anyone will agree to. And what we are seeing both in the UK, in the United States, and in France right now are very similar in that public opinion is very fickle. Public opinion is very powerful. And those who are in charge of these countries are dealing with significant changes in public opinion, mostly because the people were sold on one idea and the leaders are not able to follow through on that idea, and the public demands change. Someone has to deliver that change.
I think it's bigger than that. I mean, I agree with both you and Jen that we're seeing disenfranchisement all over the world. And, you know, government is big, government is complex. You know, there's no simple decisions because everything involves trade-offs. But, and maybe this is a particularly U.S. lens, but what concerns me is, you know, the focus has really gone away from discussions about the public good. You know, that is the, in my opinion, you know, the only reason for government is to support the public good and make sure we're advancing as a society. And the discussion seems to be all about winning and losing.
No, but you know, wherever you go. Don't you think that Donald Trump has tried to frame the discussion? Look, I'm no Trump fan. We all know that. But don't you think his rhetoric is a rhetoric of this will be good for you. This is the public good. This will be good for you. If we build a wall, if we keep those people out, if we have our brand of nationalism, don't you think his rhetoric is that of the public good?
Not so much. I don't think he has consistent points of view. And I think when he says those things, for me, they sound like marketing. Yeah. They don't sound like a really well thought out,
there's no empathy
perhaps different approach to these problems.
Well, we all agree on
But no empathy behind them. I mean, it does seem he makes much sore about winning. I mean, you saw it, and we're going to get to the story, obviously, but you saw it even yesterday when he was in with Senator Schumer and Nancy Pelosi of well, we did win Indiana. You know, we did win. It does seem to be that's what is driving it more, is that winning as opposed to
right,
because even when he was talking about the wall of what it would do, I mean, the sentences that followed of coming up with a concrete reason, it was just, you know, to stop people from coming in. But okay.
For the public good. His rhetoric is, I'm going to stop them from coming in for the public good. That's what he's saying. Now, you guys can all sit around here, and so can I, and say, this is a terrible man, yeah, blah, 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 which we all would seem to agree on. Nevertheless, when it all filters down...
Yeah, but I don't think he's doing it for the good of...
Well,
the...
that's what you think, but a third of the people in this country think he is doing it for that reason.
Yeah, I would agree with Alan. I since we seem to be transferring into talking about Donald Trump and what happened yesterday, I think that what you see him doing is playing specifically to his base, and his base does see this as the common good. They do see.
But isn't that more about winning than it is for what's good for the people of the country?
So say you, but not say they.
Well, yeah, I think it depends on your perspective. I also think in terms of what you consider to be the role of government, you have to remember that a large part of his base and a large part of the Republican Party, in fact, the biggest difference really, in my opinion, between the Democratic Party and the Republican Party is that the Republican Party really does want a very limited role of government in our society. They don't want a government that this big machine that's delivering all these services. They want a small, regulated situation where they can do what they want to do from the corporate side. They can build big business. They can pollute our water, our air. Democrats want a government that is providing all kinds of services to people, and they want it to be there for the common good.
See, I really love that because that's a discussion of ideas, right? You want to advance society. Mm-hmm. There are multiple ways of doing it. You can trim things down and give people a lot of creativity in the way they navigate. You can have a big social safety net. That's another way of doing it. I mean, that's a discussion of ideas, but that's not what I hear very much. Mm-hmm. What I hear is it's about winning. It's about, you know, do I drag my feet in order to position myself better for 2020? You know, do I play to my base? And, you know, I think there are versions of that all over the world.
And all the while, stay out of jail.
Well, yeah. can these be divorced from each other, these two concepts that you're raising here? Yes, I happen to be one who unashamedly says, and I think you may be slamming me here, and I don't care, but I am the one who say, yeah, don't impeach this president. He's a terrible man. He's helping you. It's like jujitsu. You're using his energy to get where you're going in order to do the kinds of things you're talking about. In order to implement policy, you have to know your politics.
Mm-hmm. But I think also the conversation of the public good varies, too, because you kind of, when you have the division of power to the federal government and to the states, you know, the states do have these powers. And that's why we have red states and blue states, because you have these smaller microcosms of government that's based on public votes and opinion, but they vary.
We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Jen Smith, and Terry Gibson making up the panel. We'll include your letters after this. There was a moment yesterday where, I don't know about you, but all of a sudden, call your friends, call your... call your relatives. You have to see what's going on right now in the White House. And it was, oh my God, it was something else. So you had in the room, which was supposed to be a private meeting between the President of the United States, the Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer, and the House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi of California. The three of them meet. They were going to discuss the looming budget or government shutdown, and more specifically about funding for the border wall. That private negotiating session transformed into a very bitter televised altercation over the long-promised border wall, vowing to force a year-end government shutdown if they refused to fund his signature campaign promise. It was an extraordinary public airing of hostilities that underscored a new, more confrontational dynamic in Washington. Mr. Trump vowed to block full funding for the government if Democrats refused to allocate money for the wall on the southwestern border, saying he was proud to shut the government down for border security. It seems to me, and I'm interested in what the panel thinks, but I think all three individuals had their moments to both shine and were cringeworthy. Does that seem fair?
Yeah, I think it seems fair.
That is very diplomatic.
Yeah, I'm trying to be diplomatic.
Well,
Well, I think the National Review, I think their headline today called it just shut down theater. And I thought that was a great encapsulation of...
Well, it depends on how below the surface you want to get. Mm. See, I have this theory that Donald Trump, who along with so many of the Republican colleagues, tried to make Nancy Pelosi into the worst person in the world, right? We know that. They worked on it for years and years and years. But now Trump is afraid that she's going to get kicked out and that somebody's going to come in. And then all of that work, devilifying her, is going to disappear. So he is actually, I think, in some ways trying to help her. And by bringing in the press, which was unexpected, theoretically unexpected, and which I had some real problems with. I mean, I thought, I know it's not proper to say this, but Chuck Schumer's posture was almost, he's bending over and here's Trump standing up tall in his seat and the rest of it. And he was being very low-key. Chuck was being very low-key, not Chuck-like. That we have seen in the past. So I think everybody got something out of this meeting, as Joe has indicated. Everybody got something out of this meeting that they wanted. Trump goes to his base, right? Pelosi says, "Don't you mansplain to me." Basically, that's
please don't characterize the strength that I bring to this meeting as the leader of the House Democrats who just won a big victory.
Yeah. Don't you do that. And then Chuck was great, saying, because Trump was claiming he won the Senate, and Chuck was saying, in Indiana, and what was the other one in Indiana?
North Dakota.
Yeah. Which are two Republican states.
You're in trouble, right?
And
Trump said, well, we did. And then meanwhile, the thing that seemed to set the president off upon the second, third, or fourth viewing of it seemed to be when Nancy Pelosi called it a Trump shutdown. That's what seemed to set the president off. It was starting to go off the rails, but then it really went off the rails.
But
when you got to the Trump shutdown name.
I don't know. I mean, he was all too anxious to say, yes, I will take the entire blame for this. Again, playing to the base and the art of the deal. I'll deal with this until the last minute, and that's when we'll give way.
But what about the Republican narrative that had always been, well, we're going to do this. If we do this, we'll blame the Democrats. We'll say it's their fault because they're not doing what we need to do. And really going against all of the bargaining that they had been doing prior to that just is suddenly undone.
Not all Republicans.
But I think if you do shut down around Christmas, right, and all the goods and services we've come to expect from government, no mail, TSA agents working for free. That's what happened last time. I mean, you really think about all of the different things, all of the different goods and services, and especially around the holidays.
But didn't they learn their lesson?
Then I think they will blame the Democrats.
But didn't they learn their lesson?
Now they're happy to take responsibility if indeed that happens.
Well, that's right. I mean, Alan, I mean, it was a weird thing, a weird narrative the president was saying is, Chuck, you did this last time and it didn't work out so well. So now I'll do it and it'll work out better. Why would it?
Everything
people not working doesn't work out.
Yeah.
For anybody.
Everything that happened yesterday, in my opinion, based on viewing it multiple times, was designed by Donald Trump. It was for Donald Trump.
Absolutely.
And he was speaking to Donald Trump. And I don't think we're in a position where he's particularly worried right now about what the Republican Party thinks. He's in self-preservation mode. Yeah. He's got to find a way to deflect the conversation away from all these investigations, from all the things about Russia and everybody that's going to jail. And I think he's taking some fairly desperate approaches. I also think that we just saw the first episode of a new reality show that we're going to be seeing more and more and more again.
Yeah.
I think that he purposely set this up, kept the press there for an absurdly long time. It was something like we had never seen before.
But it's sort of a new pattern because it's happened earlier this year a couple times where these press conferences, these unprecedented press conferences have just you know, led to a flurry of statements, claims, activities, things that send people like in my field scrambling to fact check. And then what do we get walk away with?
Well, and that was Nancy Pelosi's point, was that we shouldn't be doing this in front of the press. And the president said, well, I want transparency. And he said, it isn't transparency if you are using facts that aren't accurate.
Right. Yeah, but his base didn't hear her say that. His base loved when he called it out as transparency.
Exactly.
So what happened yesterday was, as Alan said, everybody kind of got something out of it, and it doesn't really change anything. I guarantee you his base loved his performance yesterday. I guarantee you that the Democratic, liberal, progressive base loved Nancy Pelosi's performance yesterday. So everybody walks away pretty much the same place we were.
Yeah.
And you cannot not overlook the timing of it too, as you know, we're looking at the Cohen sentencing and other things that are happening in the Flynn. Mueller investigation as well.
Right.
You know, is that kind of designed to, you know, overshadow some of the bigger things that are happening?
And
by
and
the
Alan,
way, I love the coverage of this for the most part. I thought it was interesting and accurate and talked about leadership and professionalism and all of that. But in one of the New York Times articles, they talked about what Nancy Pelosi was wearing. And I thought to myself,
get over it.
Get over it, guys.
Yeah. You know, like, and you know,
we didn't hear what Trump was wearing. We didn't hear what Schumer was wearing. God forbid we didn't hear what Pence was wearing. You know, get over it.
But Alan was saying earlier about Pence just sitting through the Oval Office meeting and didn't say a word. Brooke Baldwin yesterday on CNN referred to him as Elf on the Shelf, which I thought was funny, and yet I don't really like Brooke Baldwin. But anyway, Drew, but then he goes to Republicans, went to the Capitol to brief Republicans, and he described the meeting. He got a good laugh because he described the meeting as memorable and said his assessment of the meeting was there appears to be a disagreement.
Well, the other thing is they all got up. The Republicans all got up before the microphones and said, you know, we don't want to shut down the government. The guy from Kennedy from Louisiana stood up and said, well, he knows what he's doing, basically. So I think he's convinced some of them that he's going to play some hardball and that they have to go along with it. And they have no choice, as they've never had any choice with this. And that 40%, by the way, whether you like it or not, doesn't deviate. It just stays at 40%.
The other thing, too, about that, though, is that, and this is to Nancy Pelosi's point, and it was constant, which is that, okay, the president is saying that substantial sections of the Great Wall had already been completed. Well, no.
Mm-hmm.
What she was reacting to was the fact that he's, through the tweets, through talking to the base, that these things just aren't included. The other thing that I heard yesterday, it wasn't the first time he said it, but I think it was the first time he said it so publicly, was that the military would be building it. Now, when did they become contractors?
Oh, by the way,
when can you move money just to the military?
How
to
does
build
that
it?
Work?
By the way, I heard the word military, but I heard it in a different context than you did, Joe. He said whether this happens because of this or this or the military. He didn't say the military would be building it. He said, or the military. And that scared the hell out of me, to be honest with you.
No, he said the military will build the remaining sections of the wall.
Yeah, but he also, when he was giving his long list, Joe, of how this could happen, he just said, whether it's this, or the military. And I got scared when I heard that.
Yeah, it was just a weird thing because he was saying if the Democrats do not give us the votes to secure our country, the military will build the remaining sections of the wall because they know how important it is.
Well, he's implying that he has the power.
That was a different quote, yeah.
He's implying that he has the power to call out the military to do whatever he wants them to do. The, you know, the base that he's playing to, this 40%, you know, they have no problem with him shutting down the government over this wall. They love that idea because, remember, they don't really want the government operating functionally anyway. Mm. Their idea is a government that is small and basically non-existent. So shutting down the government over this, they love it.
They can't get their mail and they have trouble taking planes
this
and
is
trains.
They're not thinking through this logically the way
farm
you
bill.
Are.
Yeah.
That's not the way they're processing this. They loved everything he said. All of the honest, legitimate, valid concerns that Nancy Pelosi brought up during that conversation were not heard by his base. They don't hear her speak.
But meanwhile, I just want to read this one paragraph from the New York Times article about this on the military. It was not clear what Mr. Trump was referring to American troops he dispatched to the border on the eve of the midterm congressional elections as part of what the president called an effort to head off a migrant invasion have put up concertina wire along existing fences and barriers, but the administration has yet to spend much of the $1.3 billion Congress approved for border security last year. Under restrictions put in place by Congress, none of that money can be used to construct a new concrete wall of the sort the president has said is vital. And I guess that doesn't really matter.
Well, I just think it's a huge waste. If you remember his initial campaign promise, I think, what was it, $25 billion? He wanted $25 billion to build a wall, and then he slimmed it down to $5 billion, and, you know, he's got this allocation. So you're never going to be able to accomplish what you want to accomplish within the funds that you have. You know, you're still talking above your means from a very pragmatic standpoint. And so it's just, at the end of the day, this is an issue for everyone. Regardless of what side of the political fence you're on, this is money being taken away from your livelihoods, and what will it actually accomplish at the end of the day?
But this is a president that thrives on process, not accomplishment. Accomplishment is not the goal.
Keep, you know, the narrative on, you know, what the president's doing instead of, like, putting it in common sense terms, then the public's not going to be, fairly educated. They're not going to be able to make fair decisions, when they go to the polls or just have household discussions about what's going on. You know, people are saying that, immigrants are taking so much away from the economy. Well, we're taking away from our own economy to solve the immigrant issue. Like, we're shooting ourselves in the foot here.
Let's take a break. We got a lot of letters on this, obviously. This is what everybody wants to talk about. So when we come back, we'll focus on those. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org, and we'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan has letters, and we go to those.
We will. Thanks, Joe. Dear panel, yesterday, sit down in the Oval Office perfectly illustrated how the two most powerful Democrats want no part of being transparent. Once again, 45 exposes the Democrats. Hey, you write them, I read them. Mark says, farce.
Do we see it that way? I don't know.
What do you mean?
I said I don't think we saw it. A lot of us didn't see it that way, right?
That's what I had just said before, is that it all depends on your perspective. Some people saw this as a brilliant move by Trump, talking about transparency, and others didn't. It depends on your perspective.
Well, yes, but I think we in this room have to remember that there are a lot of people out there who do not feel the same way we do.
Yeah, exactly.
And who are committed to what they think is reality.
Right.
Okay, so Mark says, the media yesterday meant that there was no serious intention to reach a compromise. Chuck Schumer looked foolish and was remiss in presenting any counter-argument or advocating for the horror that is current practice re-refugees. That's from Mark. And then from Mike in Albany. How about that bizarre display yesterday? Do any of the participants come out particularly well from that work shoot? Does Mike Pence have permission to speak? And Keith,
what about that, though? Of I have to say, I said this at the beginning, but there were a couple of cringeworthy moments. You mentioned Chuck Schumer's posture, Alan, but there was also just this. He did seem to be playing to the camera and kind of a self-satisfaction that he had that was a little difficult to watch sometimes.
Huh. Why do you say it was difficult to watch, Joe?
You referring to Schumer or the president?
Oh, I'm sorry, Schumer.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, Schumer.
Schumer was sort of sitting on the couch. The optics were not good.
Right.
You had Trump sitting up real tall
on a
taller seat. You had Schumer bending over, literally, almost what could be seen as deferentially. And when he answered the president, he answered in a sotto voice. He was not a real aggressive.
Well, the setting was set up to be supportive of Donald Trump.
Sure.
He had
right.
the most prominent position.
Absolutely.
Chuck Schumer was sitting on this big overstuffed sofa, which is very difficult to sit in. Nancy Pelosi sitting in this little chair off to the side, and then Mike Pence is kind of sitting back in a much bigger chair. So the optics of the whole thing were set
exactly.
up to benefit Trump. I did want to point out one thing since on optics. If you when they zoom back and show the wide view, what really struck me is if you look closely, up over the fireplace, right behind Donald Trump's head, is this big, giant painting of George Washington looking down over this whole scene. Mm-hmm. And I'm thinking to myself, when I see that, and you can see it in the wide shots, there is George Washington, one of the founders of our country, watching this entire scene unfold.
Well, and also the bust of Martin Luther King.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that too.
That also is quite...
Keith says, with the German and French governments on the brink of failure, the EU needs to make an example of the UK's Brexit attempt. The more painful it is, the more it will deter future government attempts of exiting the EU. Behind the scenes, Putin is pulling the strings and funding attempts of the right wing to leave EU countries. The EU needs to fight back against Putin's interference, and that's from Keith. And Marianne, and we're getting a lot of letters here, and Marianne says, Putin is sitting in the Kremlin with a big bad wolf smirk on his face. For pennies, he has upended this country by helping to elect Trump. And in the UK, he trumped up support for Brexit. Both attacks made through disinformation on the internet are paying off royally in front of us now. And that's Marianne from Bern. Julia says, I think you're wrong. Trump speaks to the individual good, not the public good. His rhetoric is one of division. Winning is very much an individual view. I couldn't agree with you more, Jules, or Julius, he calls himself both. But I have to say, I don't think that you're giving credit to that 40%. I mean, they feel very differently than you do. It's so obvious to you, and it's equally obvious to them. And Fran says, why can't we all talk to each other? Right?
No. Ever the idealist.
Yes, yeah. And then Tom from Wilbraham. I find the idea of delaying or not pursuing impeachment for Trump, who has been implicated in federal crimes, a very dangerous idea. It is akin to what got Trump to the spot he is in. The end justifies the means. It's from Tom. Well, I could argue that. Anybody else?
Well, I still think it's beneficial to wait until more information comes available so you have more to work with.
Mueller's not even out yet.
Right. I mean, if you start the process before you have all the information, then you're really just shortchanging your ability to make your case. You want as much evidence as you can get.
Right.
And what's more, here's another problem. If, in fact, you take your shot now prematurely, you're not going to get a second shot.
No.
In other words, that's not going to happen.
No. And let's not forget that many people in the political world think that this huge blue wave that we just had was a direct result of having Donald Trump in the presidency. So as he begins to be removed from the presidency, who replaces him? And how does that affect the blue wave second time around?
Sure. Sure. That's right. And Jim writes, yesterday's, quote, event at the White House was a format with which Trump is comfortable, the reality TV show. And that's Jim. And then Susan says, conservatives want less government involvement in people's lives, which leaves large corporations to control people's lives by destroying the environment, providing unaffordable health care, starvation wages, endless war. Less regulation is what it is. And Timothy says, if Trump gets his way with the wall, most border security jobs will become redundant. I'd like to hear him explain that to those families that become unemployed. And Rich says, Alan, you said Democrats should not impeach Trump because he helps their cause. Isn't that putting party above country? The country would be definitely better with Trump out of office. Hey, Rich. Oh, I know well. Yeah, you're right. We would be better off with him and not in office. On the other hand, it seems to me that the Democrats just won a huge victory, and you can't discount that. I mean, the senator knows about politics. There are people who know about politics, and then there are people who say, you know, impeach the guy and get rid of him without thinking of the implications.
Right. Yeah, you better have a plan B before you start plan A.
And Mark says, Alan, you couldn't be more wrong about not impeaching Trump ASAP because leaving him in is better for the Democrats in 2020. That's like saying don't operate to move a malignant tumor because in 2 years there should be better surgery techniques available. Bah, humbug. Fair enough. As I say, you say them, we read them. Aaron says, I disagree with Terry's commentary that Republicans don't like big government. They clearly love big government when it comes to subsidizing profitable oil companies and controlling women's bodies. Republicans continue to have intellectual inconsistencies with their policies, to say nothing of the deficit.
Well, I mean, I would just say that, you know, to them, that's not big government. That's the lack of government. It's the lack of government that allows big corporations to grow unregulated. It's the lack of government that allows them to deny people their reproductive health care rights. So it's all about sort of the definition of what you consider big government.
And Anthony says, to Alan's point of view, panel, concerning Alan's point of view, that impeachment should not be considered because it serves the Democratic Party's agenda, so to speak. What is the difference between that and the Republican majority looking the other way at the country's expense in order to serve their own agenda? Either way, the country is poorer off for it. Oh, by the way, Anthony, for whatever it's worth, I'm all for impeaching the guy. But I think when you take your shot, you better have the information you want. The Mueller report better be in, and you better know what the implications of all the things he has said. You don't go forward without thinking it through. Okay, and then James says, what has Senator Schumer gotten from Trump in exchange for his passivity? Anybody?
Well, what was the...
what has Schumer gotten in return for his passivity from Trump? I don't know.
Well, what has anybody gotten, you know, in return for anything from Trump? I mean, I don't see anybody really successfully negotiating with him on anything.
Well, there's no consistency there, so why does that even make sense?
Exactly. Nothing does make sense in that Oval Office right now.
And then Chris says, I, for one, am very happy to see yesterday's contentious meeting. The Democrats and Republicans hold opposite and essentially incompatible opinions on building and funding the wall. I don't see any value in pretending otherwise. It's a contentious debate, and I prefer to see that contentiousness on display. Thanks always from Chris. And Mark says, heard y'all trying to parse and interpret Trump's words about using the military to build a wall. That's fruitless and pointless. Even Trump doesn't know what he means. And everything will change in a matter of days. Thanks. And that's Mark from Kinderhook.
Well, he's probably right there, right?
No, I don't think so, Joe. I mean, I think when he says here that he doesn't know what he means, I think he knows exactly what he means.
No, I agree with you that. The second part of that of in a few days it won't matter, meaning that you'll just change to something else, right?
Well, yes, he will. But, you know, for those people who think that this guy who got to be president of the United States, I'm sorry, I find him abhorrent, terrible. Let's get rid of the guy if we can. But on the other hand, you know, you've got to understand, he didn't get to be president by not knowing his base, not targeting where he was going and what he was doing.
But I'm taking the last part of that to mean, which is another way of asking this question, do any of us believe, or who of us believes, and I don't know the answer to this, but do we think there will be a government shutdown?
I think it could happen for a few days. I think more important, I think what's really important to this president right now is he needs to find a way to spin the idea that he has done something proactive that at least looks like or sounds like or feels like building a wall. It may not be a wall. It might be a fence. It might not even be a fence. It might just be some security. But he needs to somehow find a way to come out on the upside of, I am the person in charge of our borders, and I'm going to make sure they're regulated.
But Terry,
I think that's right, because the people that, you know, that 40%, I think for them, he is keeping his promises.
That's right.
Right? He talked
right.
about
that's
a wall.
Exactly
he's
right.
Building a wall.
Right.
He's
right.
putting his foot down about the wall.
And
that's
even if
really
he doesn't make it.
To them.
Right?
Yeah. It's
even
not
if
about
he doesn't
actually,
make it, he's in a position to say, I tried.
That's right. Exactly right. It's not about actually getting the wall built. It's about the process of going through to say that I did.
As we say in politics sometimes people want the results. Sometimes they just want the issue.
Yeah. I mean, when I talk to friends, I actually have friends who voted for Trump. And when I talk to them and I say, you know, what is it about what's going on that makes you feel really committed to this? That's part of what they're thinking. You know, they were disenfranchised with the previous administration. Trump made some promises. They think he's standing up to those promises. That's really important to them.
Yep.
All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation. We have Alan Chartok, Fran Berman, Jen Smith, and Terry Gibson. We will continue with your letters as well. Panel at WAMC.org right after this short break. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion. Panel at WAMC.org. We're going to go read some more letters. Just a quick note here of something that is happening. I know Alan's been talking about this, and we want to just make sure to remind you that when it comes to end of year, when people have to decide whether, you know, to support the station of a possible tax deduction, that now is the time to do this. And there are a lot of nonprofits out there who need your help. And I would certainly add us to that list. And we could certainly, when we look at what the lockbox is for a February drive, it is always greatly influenced by end of year giving. No. And this is the time.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know that it's fascinating to see the kind of mail we're getting and what people are saying about this. You know, the assumption was that when the tax bill passed, that people who didn't itemize would not send money to WAMC. In other words, only if you were itemizing, and presumably the people who have the most would be itemizing, and that they would continue to do it. And we've been watching the mail, and it really has been happening. Money's coming in. But in addition, a lot of people are saying, I don't care if I itemize or not. I want this radio station. I'm going to do what I can to support it. And they're sending it.
Well, you can send it too. It's simple, WAMC.org, WAMC.org. And right on the front page, there's a way for you to do your thing. Also, there is an address there if you just wish to send us a check. And we hope you'll do so. And we thank you very much. You're always there for us. And we know you'll be there for us now as well. WAMC.org. Let's go back to the letters and find out what else is on your mind.
Tom said, postal shutdown. Dear panel, I'm pretty sure the post office will not be affected by the shutdown. It's an independent company from federal tax funds. People will still get their cards and presents. Thanks, Tom. All right. And then we heard from Luke, who said, a small but important thing to note was how often Trump addressed Schumer when he was originally prompted by Pelosi. As the House leader, Pelosi deserves to be addressed, but was instead swept to the side while the boys bantered. Just more evidence of Trump's misogyny. Good on Schumer for calling Trump a liar in the Oval Office. I wish, and says, always thankful, Luke, I can say I wish he was a little bit more aggressive about his posture. I don't mean the way he was sitting, but what he was saying to the president.
Thanks for noticing that, Luke.
What are you saying?
Thanks for noticing that, Luke.
Yeah, you want to expand on that?
Well, I mean, I think this often happens. You know, the male talks and or the female talks and the male gets responded to. And it's the same thing that annoyed me about that one, not all of them, New York Times article that talked about her swiggy coat and her sunglasses. Let's just apply the same rules to everyone.
But, you know, when you speak, I certainly listen.
Yeah, but, you know, we're not talking about what we're all wearing, even though you look very dashing today, Alan, just saying.
I, for one, am not going to say anything the rest of the show.
Mark says, what do the Dems what to do for border security? Regarding yesterday's meeting, what the Dems never tell you is what their solution to border security. They say they believe in it, but I have never heard what their solution is. Past administrations, including Obama, left us with this mess. Once again, it's all about opposing Trump rather than working for American people, and that's from Mark. Let me disagree with you, Mark, if I may. I think the Democrats have talked about the fact that the wall is not the answer, but security is the answer. And using the kinds of things that we know are available to us now is the way to spend the money. And they've been saying it all along.
You know, it's still not actually clear that we currently have a border security problem.
Correct.
And I lived in California for a very long time, and the people going across the border, one way or another, legal and illegal, were a really important part of California's economy. So these are very complicated issues. You know, building a wall, is really not the solution to either security or the economy or all the other host of issues.
So why is what's the insistence on it?
It works. I don't know, actually.
Well, no, I think you've hit on it before. The answer is that it is a symbolic thing that he offers up to the base. And it's simple. It's very simple. Build a wall. It's much simpler than all of the technological stuff that we could be doing.
It goes beyond technological stuff, though. I think anyone knows it's the root cause of what makes people leave a place. And, you know, that's the thing. We've done nothing to talk or encourage or support the Central American or Mexican governments to solve their own problems, to keep, make their economies better. You know, if we're supposedly the leader, you know, how do we share that leadership in fostering other countries to improve their human rights conditions and so on and so forth? But we've done nothing to care about the root cause. I think there are, you know, micro NGO groups that do it, but I think as a nation we haven't. But,
I mean, we live in an increasingly global world. We have multinational companies. Our economies are dependent on one another. People, you know, cross borders all the time for legitimate purposes, you know, in all kinds of ways. And so having a somewhat isolationist president really goes against the stream of you know, current history in this century.
But I also think it's important that we not discount the letter that we just received, which I think is written from a perspective that I think is worthy of consideration in terms of trying to understand why this is important to him. What you do have to acknowledge is that while many of us disagree with Donald Trump's philosophy and pretty much everything else, his ability to communicate on this single issue by using this one symbol of a wall has been very successful to a certain degree for his base. Right. The Democrats, to the letter writer's point, have not actually been that good at communicating their specific solution to counter his solution.
Right.
There's this long list of things that we can throw out there, but sometimes one or two words can be much more effective than many,
and
this president has figured that out.
And by the way, Joe, we have one letter from Bill and Carol who say, good morning, I thought that Trump said, I'll get the wall, whatever through you, Congress, or the military, or whatever. That's the one, that was the quote that I was thinking of. Is it possible he's going to try to find the funding for the wall in the defense budget? That'd be harder for the Dems to block. Is it possible?
Well, I mean, obviously, if the military is going to be involved, it would have to come from the military budget, right?
I'd like to see what the level of involvement is.
They're going to find some piece or part that he can wrap his head around and say, "I did this, and I've made the borders more secure." And whatever that is, we're not going to know for a while. But it may not be a wall. It probably won't be a wall. But it may be. It may be more military, it may be more helicopters, it may be more cameras, who knows?
John says, good morning, panel. It's not about the left or the right, it's about the center. The 15% to 20% that vote on issues, not party lines. Those are the folks who have to be convinced by our arguments. And that's from John. Well, we could talk about that letter for about an hour here, because there's a lot of nuance. David says, from Dave, why did Trump even need to talk to Democrats to get a wall? Don't the Republicans control both houses? Isn't his problem with his own party?
Well, that was part of the point that Nancy Pelosi was trying to make yesterday, was that if he thinks he can get this done, why isn't he doing it?
Richard says, Schumer made a good statement regarding the possible Trump government shutdown. He called the possibility nothing more than a, quote, stunt that won't accomplish anything but bring hardships to Americans just in time for the holidays. Schumer and Governor Andrew Cuomo, who calls for better border security, not a wall, need to talk this up more. And that's from Richard. And Matt says, Trump's base doesn't care that he's been implicated in crimes. The Dems cannot run Biden, Warren, Sanders, or Hillary. No one over 50 has obtained the Democratic nomination in decades.
Yeah, who knows who the candidate's going to be?
You better hurry, Terry, because, you know, you're going to be 50 soon. Government I forgot. Government shutdown. Please discuss what kind of legislative log rolling would it take to reopen government if Trump shuts it down in addition to the wall funding. What, if anything, could Dems attach to this? Well, I think that the one thing they've got going for them, right, if he shuts down the government, which he may do, is just shut up and let the problem attach to the president, because after all, it's going to be his problem.
Remember, too, we're still operating under the current lay of the land politically. You know, the Democrats do not control the House right now. So to take responsibility for this at this particular moment, I think you might be right. Just sitting back and letting things fall the way they do and letting Republicans deal with it may be the strategy they go with.
Yep. And John says, vote him out. I take a backseat to doing in my opposition to Trump. I'd rather see him voted out by the American people. If impeached, his base could be further motivated to elect an even more authoritarian leader. Thank you for an excellent program. That's from John.
Thanks, John.
Michael says, Brexit. Why doesn't Trump extend an offer to help the UK trade deals, support, et cetera? They're vulnerable, and Trump might be able to negotiate a favorable deal. No. Okay, watch what you write and how you write it. Okay, thank you. Okay, and Barbara says, meeting, who was the person who decided to call in the press to what was supposed to be a private meeting? What a brilliant and purposeful maneuver. Senator Pelosi and Schumer should have walked out as soon as this scheme was detected. It was a total embarrassment for them all. You know, there's a good deal of comment in the press, right, that they all didn't do well. Nobody did well. So the three clowns, that's not me. That's dear Dr. Shartok, I agree with Comey in thinking the way to get rid of Trump is by massively unelecting him in 2020. I think impeachment or other such means will not end the problem, but will, in fact, strengthen and perpetuate it. A large majority of we, the American people, have got to do it, not just those of us in this room. And that's from George. And Denise says, pardon me. And Denise says, what, did somebody want to say something? No. What does the panel think about the demand by migrants in the caravan? Migrants is in quote, and so is the caravan, for a government to pay each of them $50,000 to return to their home countries if they won't allow all of them in our country. You can't make this up. A spokesman for the caravan presented a letter with this demand. They claim that amount will allow them to live well in their home countries. I think this demand is outrageous. That's what I got, Joe. Thank you.
All right. Those are the letters. We welcome yours. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let's go back to other topics and talk about other things that are making news. We do so by talking about the, let's talk about hacking and Chinese hackers and trying to figure out that story. This is Marriott said, I think maybe about a week and a half ago, that they had a data breach. It has now been traced to Chinese hackers as the U.S. readies crackdown on Beijing. The cyber attack on the Marriott hotel chain that collected personal details of roughly 500 million guests was part of a Chinese intelligence gathering effort that also hacked health insurers and the security clearances and security clearance files of millions more Americans, according to two people briefed on that investigation. Well, that's scary.
Yes, Fran.
Always
Fran
scary.
Help us out.
Okay, things to know. This kind of thing is happening all the time, all over the world. And some countries are really good at it. China's really good at it. Russia's really good at it. We do it too, and we're pretty good at it as well. Arguably, we're in a cyber war. And countries all over the world are trying to gain information in order to advance their agendas, and they're using cyberspace to do it. So what were the Chinese looking for? It appears from the news that they were looking for information about individuals with security clearances. That means that they can track people going back and forth, they have a better sense of spies, and they have a better sense of their own citizens who are working with spies, and they very much want to be clamping down on their own citizens. What's interesting is that this is being done at the time we're thinking about trade with China. This is being done at the time the CFO of Huawei, thank you very much, is being, you know, waiting for extradition in China. All of those things aren't necessarily really directly related, but they're creating a context that's heating up the trade war. But cybersecurity is a real problem, and here's, not surprisingly, where I have a very strong opinion, which is that it is really important for the U.S. to be paying attention to security and privacy and creating kinds of policies and regulations that mean that the things that we are doing is secure. Think about this Marriott data breach. If somebody steals my credit card, I do not have to, and runs up charges. I don't have to pay for that. But, you know, if Marriott has a data breach and my, you know, passport is stolen, all of the bad stuff will come on me. I have to sort of change those things. I have to do that. We don't have laws in place that protect us.
So what do you mean by that, Fran, when you say if they grab your passport? You mean technologically?
Noel, I mean, grab the number of the passport and other identifying information about me.
But that's a good point that everything then falls on you. I mean, you're the one. I mean, you're the victim.
Yeah, I'm the victim. But there are other places where we have laws in place that give the companies more incentive to do a better job on security. And my credit card is one of those. You know, if somebody steals my credit card, it falls on the company by and large. It doesn't fall on me. Mm-hmm. And so sort of the whole area around cybersecurity are things both at the consumer space and for espionage, which is a really different kind of a space. Both of those really need a lot of attention.
All right, final 2 minutes. The Google CEO testified on Capitol Hill yesterday. What should we take away from that?
Does anybody else want to talk about that? You know, he testified and they asked him a lot of questions which had nothing to do with the Google algorithm and bias. They asked dumb questions about their iPhones and Wikipedia. This is another place where, you know, it's government's job to set the guardrails for these companies. Mm-hmm. It's a conflict of interest for Google or Facebook or any of these companies to be monitoring themselves. Their job is to make a profit in the best way that they can. It's our job to set the guardrails about privacy, about where information can go, under what circumstances can information go there. And, you know, I think calling these guys to Congress is kind of entertaining, but the questions are bad and we're not doing enough.
Well, and I think that illustrates how little policymakers know about the depth and breadth of and importance of cybersecurity and technology advancements in the market. And, as we comparatively talk about, you know, the physical borders, and then we look at our digital frontiers and what's at stake, there's a huge gap.
It's a great piece of evidence to support the fact that we need more election and campaign finance reform to make it possible for people that do understand how technology works and that do understand how this hacking is really detrimental to our democracy to give them opportunities to get elected,
right?
So that they can be in places to ask the right questions.
Right. And I just want to say to our listeners, I had the great pleasure of giving a talk on the Internet of Things at Indiana University last Friday. And, you know, I ended up this talk about, you know, self-driving cars and robots and all kinds of fun and crazy things with what you can do. And there's a lot of stuff you can do. This is Christmas. You're buying digital products. You can look at the security in these products and ask questions and try to make good choices about it. You can weigh in with your vote. When you vote for somebody, you ought to know what they think about net neutrality or data privacy or cybersecurity or any of these issues. And you can try to vote for people who are reasonably well-informed on this. You can try to influence your coworkers when you design products. So there's lots of things that all of us can do. And, you know, I really think that this is going to come back to bite us. This is the Achilles heel of the digital age, and we really need to pay attention.
Especially if we don't spend more time on cybersecurity instead of spending all of our time on border security. Because the breaches that are happening in cyberspace are far greater than anything that's happening. Mm-hmm.
Much more catastrophic. If your pacemaker gets hacked, if your car gets hacked,
you keep saying that. It just
can kill you.
Okay, well, we're out of time, but thank you to everybody.
Happy holidays.
We'll be back right after this.